Karin Zissis of ASCOA Online. In April 2020, scholars and journalists alike began warning about the risks of falling into a pandemic-fueled surveillance state. But a year later, did these predictions come true? Well, according to Rafael Zanata, the director of the Data Privacy Brazil Research Association, the answer is no. Not in Brazil, at least. If anything, the transition to a digital world brought the issue into the homes of average Brazilians and reaffirmed the need for data privacy. But that doesn't mean an end to Brazilians' conversation about data protection. An upcoming Supreme Court case on government data collection and the recent implementation of a general data protection law in Brazil leave a lot of questions unresolved. To help parse through the legislation and what it means for different sectors of the population ahead of next year's general elections, my colleague Katie Hopkins talks with Zanata in this episode. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en foco.
América Latina en foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
Thank you so much for joining us on Latin America in Focus.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
So what I wanted to kick off this conversation with is every day it seems like more technology is coming into our lives. And with more technology, of course, comes greater conversations about how we can protect the data that a lot of the technology requires. Brazil passed the Brazilian General Data Protection Law, or the LGPD, in 2018, but the law only went into effect a few months ago in September 2020. Could you walk me through that law and what it is trying to achieve so far?
Sure. So the Brazilian General Data Protection Law is pretty much influenced by the European legislations, such as GDPR. So it is a broad legislation. It's not focused on one specific economic sector. And it's really focused on detailing data subject rights. So it affirms a set of data subject rights and also impose a series of obligations of duties to data controllers, to those that are interested in using personal data for economic purposes or sharing data or storing data. And it imposes a set of obligations in terms of identifying one legal ground for data processing. So it must be based on consent, or it could also be based on legitimate interest or for public policies or for health issues. So the law has 10 legal bases that you can choose to justify legally that you're processing data. But you're also obliged to nominate a data protection officer. And in certain cases, such as data processing that involves high risk for civil liberties, you must also do a series of procedures, such as the data protection impact assessment. And you must have a dialogue with the data protection authority. So it really creates a kind of a specific regulatory structure. In certain ways, it reminds of environmental legislation in the sense that because you're doing one economic activity that can impose harm, you are obliged to do a certain number of things before. That's why it is ex ante regulation, not ex post. It's not interested in like going after the economic actors after the harm, but actually imposes obligations before. So that's the logic of the legislation. And it was a long process. Indeed, it took 10 years of discussion in the Congress. And it was a multi-stakeholder process as well. So private firms and NGOs and civil society, they were pretty much involved in the discussion. It was not imposed by the government.
Mm. And although it's too early to tell the success of it so far, how is it doing? Are you seeing a marked change in how data is being used and collected?
Yeah, absolutely. There is a profound cultural change, but also because of the international scenario, not only because of the Brazilian one. So Brazil actually came very late to this conversation. You have more than 100 countries with general data protection laws. Brazil was much like the US. The US also chose before to have specific privacy laws for health issues, for banking issues, for credit scoring. And now I would say that the dominant logic of data protection laws is to have this European approach of a general data protection law and one specific authority to look after this issue, the data protection authorities. So Brazil was late, but there was a profound change, and you can perceive that in the number of lawyers and people from business administration jumping into the scene and becoming data protection officers and trying to change culture internally, but also because they're being pressured from the outside in order to make business transnationally. They are being pressed to have GDPR compliance structures and to really demonstrate that they are not processing data unlawfully. So it's becoming part of the day-to-day activity of most of the firms, not only technology firms, but I would say also health firms, educational firms, and many other areas.
And it's interesting that all while there's this huge conversation about data privacy and making sure data is safely and securely used, at the same time, President Bolsonaro signed a decree in 2019 that facilitates large swaths of data between government entities to be shared and created a centralized registry. I mean, The Intercept even wrote in June 2020 that the Brazilian intelligence agency already took advantage of this, requesting huge amounts of driver's license data from another government entity. How does this interact with the general data protection law? And is this something that you're worried about at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're living in an ambivalent scenario in the sense that at the same time that you have a lot of profound changes in civil society and also in the private sector, I would say, because you can see a very honest discourse towards data protection, with people being involved and trying to push things internally in their own firms. But when you look to the government response to this legislation, it's been very slow. So the government took a very long time to actually establish data protection authority. They only did it because the Supreme Court ruled a case in May last year. And the Supreme Court blocked the government from getting personal data from telecommunication operators to use for research. The government wanted to do research by telephone calls, and they demanded telecommunication firms to share names, telephone numbers, and addresses. And the Supreme Court ruled a case in which it stopped the data sharing. So it ruled the federal decree unconstitutional. And it said that the government could not access this amount of data, even during the pandemics, if it did not have enough safeguards to demonstrate that there is accountability and oversight, and there is like an external authority to control the actions of the government. So that's the reason why the government realized it was important to establish the DPA, the Data Protection Authority, and it did it 5 months after the Supreme Court decision. But also in the meantime, during the whole 2020, last year, we saw a lot of abusive practices being conducted by the intelligence agency, ABIN, trying to get biometric data from drivers, as you mentioned, also trying to set up political dossiers of public servants. So there was this big case about police officers that declared themselves anti-fascists, and the government was conducting a big file on them, a personal file on every public servant and police officer that were declared anti-fascist. This was also ruled by the Supreme Court as completely illegal. So, and you can find many examples of abusive uses of personal data by the government and this logic of freely sharing personal data. I would say that this is the most important topic in Brazil right now. The Supreme Court is about to rule a new case regarding the constitutionality of this federal decree that created the unified database. Our organization is participating in the Supreme Court as amicus curiae, so we have intervened as a technical organization presenting legal arguments for the court. And we expect the court to rule that the federal decree is unconstitutional, because it also does not provide enough safeguards for detecting the public reason in order to share data from one unit of the government to the other, especially when it involves intelligence. So right now we are defending a kind of a new separation of power, which we called informational separation of powers in Brazil.
You touched on this a little at the beginning of that answer, but I'm really interested in how this past year has kind of transformed how we see personal data. Can you kind of talk a little bit more about how the pandemic has influenced this conversation currently, and if you see any long-term impacts of how the pandemic has just fundamentally changed how we work?
I would say that curiously, in the beginning of the pandemic, there was a lot of concerns about like a total surveillance state, and many people wrote about it, even philosophers like Harari or Giorgio Agamben. But I would say that actually we had some really good positive effects of the pandemic in terms of people being concerned about privacy and data protection. First of all, because they perceive that indeed we live in a data-driven society and we are constantly mediated by softwares and platforms and tech firms. Like all of a sudden, everyone started to work it online or to study online and to perceive that the use of personal data is the medium of that. And this generated a very good perception that indeed personal data protection is part of the set of fundamental rights. The second positive effect is that when the federal government tried to use data in an abusive way, there was a very quick reaction from civil society. So the Brazilian Bar Association and NGOs and experts, they challenged the government at the Supreme Court and they won. So this checks and balances by the judicial power is very important, especially the recent rulings by the Supreme Court. And finally, I think the federal government understood that if they wanted to succeed in future public policies, they will need to have a dialogue with the data protection authority. So what we're seeing in the 5 months is a very interesting scenario. The data protection authority, despite being formed by 3 former militaries, which is quite bizarre. I mean, I don't know any other democratic country that has 3 former military members being directors of data protection authorities. But in fact, what we perceived in the past 5 months is that they are concerned with the agenda of fundamental rights, and they are trying to structure the data protection authority in a way that provides educational support and a participatory culture in building up the new set of legislation for data protection. Even in the middle of the pandemics and with the total potential drive towards surveillance, we could actually have some positive effects in terms of data protection in Brazil. Other countries did not have that effect. For instance, Singapore had horrible scenario with the Trace Together application for contact tracing that the police can use the data from the application. This is horrible. And this is something that is fortunately is not happening in Brazil. So this also connects with the fact that the president was not so much interested in fighting COVID through technology. And this is something, I mean, it's a cruel thing that the president is not concerned with the pandemics, but it generated one positive thing because he was not interested in fighting COVID. So he did not implement any set of robust technological mechanisms to trace contacts or to monitor people.
That's a really interesting positive effect from something that is actually like pretty terrible.
Yeah, it is.
But you said some really encouraging things at the beginning about how motivated people are to make sure their own data is protected and how engaged it sounds like populations are, which brings me to kind of the human effect of data collection. I mean, although there's a lot of screens and usernames and accounts, at the other end of computers, there is a person. And I'd like to talk about how data collection affects people in different ways. Could you talk about how this legislation and also kind of this grassroots movement, it sounds like, for data protection has affected different Brazilians?
Yeah, sure. And I think this is a very important topic because most people think data protection is about privacy, and it's not. Data protection is about power, inequality, and asymmetries. Since the beginning, when it was formulated in the 70s as a concept. That is the reason that we say in the federal legislation that to protect privacy is one thing and to protect data protection is another thing. Data protection is perceived as an autonomous fundamental right, because it's really about the flow of data and how it influences the distribution of power and money in society, and how it generates abusive discrimination in some ways. So one of the most concrete scenario of abusive data uses is how we are becoming a scored society. This is happening in the past 40 years. It began with credit scoring firms, but now it's approaching every scenario. And we are being constantly scored through algorithms. And this is the new frontier of power, as Shoshana Zuboff says, because it's true. I mean, it's all about determining how we can actively become citizens and how we are blocked from accessing certain types of services and goods, and how we are also being profiled, not by who we are individually, but by inferences of groups, of social profilings. So this can generate a lot of abusive scenarios. The other thing that we are deeply concerned about data protection is the principle of necessity, what we call in the law. You must use personal data only if you need it, and if you can demonstrate the reasons that you need to use it. So right now we have a very strong debate in Brazil about facial recognition technologies, if they must be used like openly by the police or in public squares or in public avenues. And there is this very strong discussion about, well, why do you need it? I mean, there's no empirical evidence that by using facial recognition technologies, you can decrease crime. There is no scientific report that demonstrates that. There is even profound doubts between public security experts regarding it. And because you don't have this demonstration of necessity, it doesn't make sense to simply impose it. This is like a very profound violation of fundamental rights and civil liberties. And this is one specific topic that we will discuss a lot in Brazil, because Brazil, it is indeed facing a public security crisis, but there is no demonstration that we need to adopt massive facial recognition technologies. And the empirical research conducted by NGOs demonstrate in Brazil last year, there were 151 people arrested by facial recognition technologies, especially in Rio de Janeiro and Salvador. And 90% were Black, because first of all, they choose specific places that workers go. So they do not put these technologies in front of banks or big avenues in which you have like white collar crime, as we say in Brazil. Second of all, they cross the databases with previous databases from the police, which is heavily focused on what we say patrimonial crimes in Brazil. So thieves, small crimes, and so on. And this affects a lot the community of the periphery. I mean, they are constantly filed and they're taken to police stations and they have this conduct of taking the photographs of them. So they populate this database. And there's also the problem of the bias. I mean, there were a number of cases in which Black people were completely misunderstood by the machine and the facial recognition technology, because the data set was trained using the database of white population, or it was provided by a Chinese firm that trained the data set with the Chinese people. And when it comes to Brazil, which is a highly miscegenated population with Blacks and indigenous people and white people, it doesn't perform well and has this very dramatic effect of strong errors of accuracy. So this is another frontier of battle, I mean, challenging the use of facial recognition technologies in Brazil.
I really like the observation you made at the beginning of the answer that this is really about power. Data collection is about consolidating power. And that kind of brings me to my last question, which is, looking ahead, Brazil has a busy year coming up in 2022. You guys have elections, and with all this new legislation, and you said the Supreme Court case that's going to happen in the coming weeks and months, what do all these new laws mean for the election, and what's your outlook?
Yeah, I mean, it means a lot, because the last election that which Bolsonaro won was heavily affected by the use of social media, WhatsApp, and data-driven campaigns. especially based on the use of WhatsApp. And there, obviously, the data protection legislation is already affecting legislation of elections. It says that a political party cannot buy a data set from a data broker to operate like massive messages to use it on WhatsApp to deliver political messages. There is going to be a lot of enforcement in the regulation of the use of data by political parties in the next election. And this is one big effect. The other one is that there is going to be a lot of disputes, and it's going to be a challenging scenario on how political parties present proposals for the problem of public security. Bolsonaro has this very strong agenda that people must have guns, we got to fight crime, and we got to take down the bad guys, and we must reinforce the intelligence capacity of the police officers to cross personal data of convicted criminals. And there's even big projects conducted with the US on a unified database on high-profile crimes like drug dealing and to monitor the vehicles in Brazil in a unified database. This is one set of ideas which collides with data protection law. And data protection law has a very deep problem. It does not apply specifically for activities of public security and criminal investigation. So there is this necessity in the next 2 years of approving a new legislation that is purely focused on criminal investigation and public security. There is one proposal on the table, but probably this will be faced democratically in the next term. Once the president gets elected, probably one of the first issues he will need to deal in 2023 is how to structure this legislation for criminal investigation, public security, and the use of personal data. And I think it is difficult for progressives and for people like Lula to present coherent and strong arguments to the population that you must protect the fundamental liberties and rights of everyone. Because when we are in a scenario of fear, like we are right now, we want to punish the bad guys. So we kind of abandon the discourse of public and basic guarantees for everyone. So it becomes this logic of friend and enemy, ours and them, and who we need to fight. And it's a big problem when we put this discourse on these terms. I mean, the discussion should not be about that, because maybe tomorrow I'm going to be in a criminal process. I need to have my rights respected, even if I'm a criminal. And this is a very challenging scenario, I would say, for progressive candidates. So I would say that this could be used, this discourse about state of exception in data protection in terms of criminal issues, could be used by Bolsonaro and the right wing to even try to win the elections. Probably this is not going to be the main issue of discussion, but it might be used by candidates in the next election.
Well, thank you so much.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Karin Zissis. This episode was produced by Katie Hopkins. The music in this podcast was recorded at America Society in New York City. For more about upcoming concerts online, visit musicoftheamericas.org. We hope you enjoyed this episode. You can help us spread the word by giving us 5 stars, writing a review, sharing, and subscribing at Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.